So, Harvey Weinstein, accused of sexual misconduct, he's out of a job. Kevin Spacey, Louis C.K., Matt Lauer, Charlie Rose, other media and entertainment figures have lost work. But last night, Roy Moore came close, as we discussed, came close to being elected to the U.S. Senate. And Clarence Thomas is still on the bench. Bill Clinton stayed in the White House. Donald Trump is still there. Why are media figures held to a higher standard than public officials? My guest is a former assistant U.S. attorney and Whitewater investigator, Kim Whaley. Welcome to KUOW.
Thank you, Bill.
Kim, this is how Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan put it. He told NPR that politicians face a watershed moment.
I think we're all realizing that sexual harassment in America is absolutely pervasive, and it's got to go, and we need to end it. And nowhere more is this important to set a standard and example than elected officials.
If elected officials are realizing that sexual harassment has to end, why do accused politicians leave more slowly than in the private sector?
Well, they don't have the power to give each other a pink slip. The voters do. So in Congress, the only way that someone could technically be fired is under the Constitution is for two-thirds of the particular House to actually vote to expel them for misconduct, which is close to impossible. The other option is political pressure, which we're seeing happening. But as far as just saying, listen, the bottom line's being hurt by this scandal, we need to make money for the company, you're out, that's not an option for politicians.
I want to talk more about the political process. Do you think Hollywood and the media are a model of accountability?
Well, I think it's translating these days into more accountability than the public sector, but hardly a model. I mean, at least the rumors are that some of this behavior had been going on behind the scenes for quite a while, and higher-ups tolerated it because it wasn't actually making an impact on the company. Once it became public, with the media having access to it, the information, and some of these women coming forward publicly, then the retribution and the accountability was swift. So in that regard, yeah, there's more incentive to hold these people accountable when there's a dollar bottom line at issue, whereas in the public sector, it's a lot more attenuated. And it's set up that way on purpose by the framers of the Constitution, actually.
Well, so in Hollywood and the media and business in general, it's the dollar bottom line. You could argue that that's the case in financing of elections as well. What is Washington, D.C.'s feedback mechanism?
The feedback mechanism, sure. I mean, you raise the question of money in politics, and that's a complicated one, and it certainly does impact this notion of democracy that we live under. But beyond that, I mean, the impact is, as I mentioned, listen, we've got to wait to go to the polls, and I think what happened yesterday with Roy Moore is an example of pure democracy at work. That's exactly how the framers wanted it to go. The voters made clear that even in a nearly purely red state, they didn't want a person with that record of alleged wrongdoing in the Senate. And so it sort of took it out of the hands of Congress, whether they're pressure Roy Moore to resign or to expel him. The voters spoke on that, and I think in that regard, it demonstrates democracy works, although with sitting members of Congress, or the president for that matter, we have to wait for the next election unless there's some internal incentive to resign.
Well, what about expulsion and impeachment? Let's start with that. Can congressional leaders expel a member for something they did before they took office?
That's a great question. I think the Constitution is unclear on that. It refers to misconduct. And I think probably the better reading is that it really is for an abuse of office. And if they did something prior to taking office, that's not exactly abuse of power in office. So I think if it came to that expulsion for something that preceded someone's term in Congress, then there would be potentially a court battle over whether that expulsion was constitutional or not, and we've seen how that drags down lots of things in terms of our politics working and government working.
Yes, you point out in a piece that I read of yours how rare it is to be expelled from Congress and why it happens.
Sure. So, you know, historically it's happened for, you know, things on a level of treason, and it's, as I mentioned, it takes two-thirds of the particular chamber, and you know, with these numbers, you're talking people from both sides of the aisle, and as we can see, it's hard to agree on almost anything these days in Congress because it's so polarized.
What about impeachment? President Clinton stayed in office. President Trump has, so far, a Republican House and Senate. What are the odds of impeachment for personal allegations that, again, so far with President Trump, happened before he took office, if they happened?
Well, that's a different provision of the Constitution. It refers to high crimes and misdemeanors, and I think most scholars would say that doesn't include necessarily a crime. So I think a president probably could be impeached for things other than what happened in office. And we saw some of the, you know, Bill Clinton's prior history of dealing with, you know, women prior to taking office being an issue. But I think, again, it would be a highly, highly politicized process and one that would be difficult, I think, to see through in this particular Congress with both houses in the Republican chamber. Now, we've heard some talk of potential investigations, or at least some call for investigations of the allegations of sexual misconduct against President Trump. But that remains to be seen whether Congress actually takes steps to investigate that. I think it's more likely that if there's any call for impeachment, it would be around Robert Mueller's investigation of the Russian influence in the election.
When it comes to sexual misconduct allegations, what about the court system? What are there any changes, realistic changes to our justice system that would allow prosecutors to hold accused people more accountable than they are now?
So in the private sector, there are two ways. One is, you know, criminal liability for sexual misconduct or all the way to rape, and that varies by state. In the private sector, when it comes to civil liability, there's a statute, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, that Congress decided that sexual harassment's illegal. And there are some hoops that people have to jump through, but they're really different than the hoops that women have to jump through to make claims against members of Congress. So to answer your question, you know, we've seen some calls and some movement towards making the process of bringing claims against members of Congress more transparent. I think that would be a step in the right direction. Beyond that, you know, it requires an appetite on prosecutors to actually bring these claims. And I used to defend these claims in on behalf of the Department of Justice in the civil side. And it takes a lot of guts for a woman to come forward, even in court, because, you know, her whole personal history becomes subject to impeachment. So there are a lot of barriers to entry. It's not an easy fix legally. It really is something that has moral and ethical implications that I think go beyond the Constitution and statutes.
Do you think that political bodies can change their reporting, their complaint system, their accountability system in a way that can really change the game on the culture of sexual harassment and the reporting of it?
Sure, definitely. In Congress, we have a particular situation now where it's 3 months for a complainant to even be able to bring a claim in Congress in the administrative process. And, you know, members of Congress get paid, their lawyers paid, the claimant does not, everything is confidential. If there's a settlement, it's paid out of public money. So, you know, to the extent to which members have to pay claims out of their own budget, they actually feel the impact, to the extent to which it's made public. I think all of those kinds of changes would make it more likely that people would bring claims and more likely that members and others in Congress in particular would pay attention to these laws. I mean, it's human nature. If there are no consequences for bad behavior, people do it. I mean, if no one pings you for parking in front of a hydrant on your street, you do it all the time. If everyone gets a ticket when the car pulls up, then people don't park in front of that hydrant. And it's no different, really, when we're talking about sexual misconduct, unfortunately.
I'm talking with former Assistant U.S. Attorney Kim Whaley. Overall, you have said don't look to the Constitution to be a great protector. Why is that?
Well, the framers set it up so that the people manage their own government. And so the notion is voters have to vote these folks out of office. And I think what happened yesterday is voters woke up and said, listen, this matters to us, even though we have other issues on the table. Abortion was one, I think, that a lot of people talked about in Alabama. Even though we have other issues that matter to us, this is one that we're going to actually vote on. So it's just a very slow, attenuated process to hold people accountable at the polls. I mean, of course, you know, we can call our members of Congress to put political pressure. We saw that with Nancy Pelosi and others and Representative Conyers resigning and Al Franken resigning. So that can happen, although, you know, there's been some pushback on that, the notion being that that's also unconstitutional because it could ultimately be the voters who decide, not members of Congress pressuring their colleagues to resign. But that's another issue.
How do you see Congress figuring out which behavior is unacceptable? Is it personal body comments, propositioning, patting, groping, offers to be a surrogate parent? It's one thing after another.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think there's been some concern that, okay, now are we, if someone holds a door open for a woman, is there going to be a claim of, you know, some kind of sexual misconduct? And we know in the criminal context, as I mentioned before, there are different levels of sexual assault. There's groping all the way to rape. And I think we know as a society what the lines are, you know, in our own social behavior. So I think that will hopefully sort itself out. I mean, we've seen certainly, as you mentioned, resignations for a whole range of behavior. I think what happened, the allegations against Roy Moore were probably, you know, the apex of what is the most serious in our society. And the fact that the voters drew a line there, I think, is significant. Beyond that, the way this works is case by case by case. And so transparency in Congress, to the extent to which we can get a sense of how these are being managed and handled and made public, which ones are settled and which ones are not, that's kind of how the law sorts out where to draw the lines between something that's just awkward, something that's inappropriate, and something that's unlawful.
Finally, Kim, some Democrats say Democrats shouldn't purge misbehaving members if Republicans don't do it. Where do you stand on that?
That's I think that's a political question. My view, and I'm writing a book on this and I've been speaking on this, is that the constitutional values that we all hold dear are not expressed in the Constitution. You can't just walk into court and enforce it. So I think it's a good thing if our elected leaders take stand on sort of, you know, the softer values in the Constitution, including transparency, accountability, honesty, integrity, all of those things. So I wouldn't be too hard on the Democrats. I mean, in best case scenario, we kind of see across the board more of this type of self-correcting process if it's too difficult to wait for the next election to actually make that kind of a difference.
Kim Whaley is a professor of law at the University of Baltimore and a former assistant United States attorney. Kim, thanks very much.
Thanks, Bill.